Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to the Living Free Show on 3CR Community Radio 855 kHz on your AM dial. I'm Anne. I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm, and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. Today in the studio, it is my pleasure to be joined by Brenda. Brenda has been on the Living Free Show quite a few times, I think mainly before the pandemic. So if you want to hear Brenda's full story, you can go back and into our podcasts and see the conversations that she had with Bill. So today on this show, instead of focusing on Brenda's personal story of being close to a problem drinker, we'll do something a little bit different. We're going to dive a bit deeper into the idea of the personal freedom that Al-Anon, like many other 12-step programs, the personal freedom that it offers through the practice of the 12 steps. So welcome, Brenda, and thank you so much for offering to have that conversation.
Thanks, Anne. It's great to be here.
Great to have you back. Brenda, you're the public information coordinator for Al-Anon in the Victorian Southern area. Is that right?
Yeah, just taken on that position about 3 or 4 months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Just as a matter of interest, can you tell everyone what that involves and why it's important?
It's very important because it's about carrying the message and encouraging members to carry the message. I'm just really the person that all the reports come to of what is happening in the different districts and groups of their PI, that's public information, how they disperse that in their communities. And because we're not a secret society, we need to let people know that we exist. And my job really is just to collect that and collate it and put it into a report for the group news every month and every 6 months for the assembly, just to let them know what's going on in the public information area. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so thank you so much for coming in today and giving this the public information that you're about to give about what recovery in Al-Anon looks like. Mm-hmm. And just for those who haven't heard your story, you've told it to Bill, you know, in an hour-long conversation. Do you think you can condense it into a two-minute summary for the people now, just before we start getting into the steps?
Look, basically, I left my marriage nearly 50 years ago after 7 years. I took 3 children with me and came to Melbourne, an absolute wreck. And I had to build myself up from almost a vegetative state, I would say, after not having any resources to call upon it in my marriage. Al-Anon, I didn't know existed. It may not have existed in Queensland where I was. But I came back to family, and 13 years later, after some self-help things that I did to get myself back on track, I walked in the doors of Al-Anon with a friend, totally accidentally. She had come with me to a meeting, Brenny. She'd gone to this meeting and I just didn't even know where I was going. Walked in the doors of the Frankston meeting, nearly fell over when I saw the first three steps and thought, that's what I practiced. That's what I did on the last day of my marriage. I completely surrendered to God. I remember my prayer was, God, help me. I don't know what to do. And I was at that time in thinking, considering ringing and having myself committed because I was going insane, living with alcoholism with my husband. And I prayed instead. And I remember I was just enveloped by something beyond my understanding that gave me the courage to get out, take my children and go. I was totally fearless in the moments that I left. I cannot believe it when I think about it. And I got to the Gold Coast 2 hours later, not knowing how I got there. I believe I was carried. Footprints, that was me that day. Carried to safety. And not only was I safe from my alcoholic, who hadn't been physically violent at that stage, was verbally aggressive and very bizarre in his behaviours, but I actually was at the point, I think I could have committed murder. I was really in a bad way. So that was, I knew when I walked into Alan on those first three steps, the lights went on, it was like a Broadway show. Oh, my God, that's exactly what happened that day. And it was wonderful because I had forgotten that memory. That was a repressed memory. And it came into focus that day at that meeting, and I'm so grateful. And I haven't stopped really using the Al-Anon program since. I did use it for 5 years solidly, went to meetings, mostly in the Frankston area, to any anniversary I could get to, talking at AA meetings, whatever I could do. I was just filled with the word of Al-Anon. I just wanted to tell everybody. But they said, don't get on a soapbox. This is a gentle program. We don't promote ourselves. Just practice, practice, keep coming back, get to as many meetings as you can. And yeah, you can spread the word, but just not on a soapbox. So I realised that it was a humble program. And for the next 5 years, totally enveloped myself in the program. And then I had my son passed away and I thought I didn't need Al-Anon anymore. I resolved the alcohol issues, I thought. And so for 10 years, I went into work, which was very humble work in aged care. And I still used the program. I still was very much, because I came from a community development perspective, which says don't impose your will on anybody. You encourage people through educating them to fulfill their own projects. You're just there as a resource. So it was kind of back into my work. And then 10 years later, my disease came in the back door, and that is to want to rescue, fix, manage and control my eldest daughter that I'd asked to come and live with me, with her family. I bought the house, got it all set up, my part of the house, their part of the house, fantastic. But I wanted to control her. I wanted her to do the washing that was piling up in the laundry. I wanted her to have the meals on time with the children. I went into total control mode. And that's when I knew, oh, back to Al-Anon. So that was 2006. I go to the Chelsea meeting and I've been coming ever since, and I will continue to go until my legs don't carry me through the doors. And that's my... Thank you.
Who needs an hour show when you can tell the whole story in 2 minutes? Okay, that's a great... we can go straight into the 12 steps now, because you covered all the issues there about wanting to commit murder, about being so low you didn't know what to do with yourself, and then this addiction, addiction might be, is probably not too strong a word, that a lot of Al-Anon members have to fixing, managing, controlling. So I just want to say, I'm going to read the preamble to the 12 steps as Al-Anon practices them, and then we're going to hear your story of practicing the 12 steps, Brenda. So the Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery, and that's recovery for everyone, not just the alcoholic. Al-Anon is not, and this is important, it is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. And that stuff there is absolute gold. And that is the reason the thing has survived for nearly a century. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. Now, step one is we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So, Brenda, I'm just going to read something out and I'm just going to get you to comment on it. For those affected by the disease of alcoholism, step one can be a daunting task. Because our thinking is often distorted, we can fall prey to the illusion of control. In trying to control the alcoholic's drinking and behaviour, our own lives become unmanageable. When we admit our powerlessness, it does not mean we are helpless. In accepting the reality of our situation, we begin to realise that we can, what we can and what we cannot change. Through this acceptance, we gain personal power and freedom. Feel free to talk about that for a few minutes, please.
Okay, well, the experience I had coming into my first Al-Anon meeting is pretty well a summation of what happened on the day. I was affected by the disease, that's for sure. I didn't know it was a disease. I thought my husband had a personality disorder with a heavy drinking problem. Well, because he was an architect, a professional man, could move in any company, could take over a room when he came in. He was very much out there. And it couldn't be an alcoholic. Even though I had an uncle and aunt that were alcoholics, I just didn't see him. I was in denial, perhaps. And I did fall prey to the illusion of control, thinking I could control him by being totally subservient. I even bought the alcohol for him. I didn't do any of those other things. I hear a lot of people say, tip it out, dilute it, hide the bottles. I bought the alcohol. But I knew by the, well, I left him twice in the marriage because of his behaviour. But I knew after the second time I left him that I was walking on eggshells, as we call it, walking on eggshells. So I'd taken the position from day one of our marriage to not argue with him, because my mother's only advice to me was, don't argue with a drunk. You may as well just argue with a bottle. But in that process, what I did was I sucked in all the resentment, all the things that I wanted to say and was too scared to say, because I hated anger. I hated, never grew up with parents that were, I never saw my parents argue. I didn't know how to cope with a man that wanted to argue. So I would shut up, suck it in. But that's what built up on that day that I told you about. The resentment built up to the point where I just burst. I was like a dam bursting. And that's where I had to ask God for help and surrender myself because I was mad. Admitting that powerlessness, that's what I did that day, that surrender. I just remember my whole body just collapsing. God help me, I don't know what to do. And in that moment I accepted, we've got the three A's. Awareness, I became aware that I was in trouble, and he probably was too because I had the knife. So I can still see the knife in the 1970s scabbard. The stay sharp.
Yeah.
The black handle sitting on the bench, very vivid. If he tries to stop me, that's going to go through him. Oh, my God. But thank goodness God was there to stop me. So I knew, I had the awareness, the acceptance. I accepted. I had no more aces up my nose. I never had any aces anyway. The illusion of the aces, the control, God. There was nothing more I could do. Acceptance, action, get out. That were the three steps I worked because I said that prayer. And through that, I could not believe the sense of relief and release I had and the fearlessness that came into me because I just said that simple prayer and handed my will and my life over to a power beyond my comprehension. I wasn't a religious person. I went to Sunday school a few times as a kid and that was it. I was not a religious person. I did not have a punishing God in my understanding of a higher power. To me, it was just a loving God that wanted me to be safe and my babies as well. And so I actually gained personal power and freedom in that time to do what I needed to do. It only lasted for 2 hours. I collapsed in a heap on a phone box at the end of the Gold Coast and rang friends after my brain literally had to come back into my body. I was in slow motion. As I connected, the brain connected, I had to kind of work through this fog of where the hell am I? What have I done? Who do I know here? Rang my brother's groomsman who lived there with his wife and children. And it was amazing because when I rang him, in those days it was the old phone box with the yellow pages and the white pages. I couldn't even think of his name. It took so long to come to me because I was in this fog. I had been out of my body. There's no doubt about it. And when I finally rang him, I said, Tony, it's Brenda here. I've left Jack. Can you please help me? Oh, Brenda, where are you? And I told him, and he said, 3 streets away. Now, I didn't even know where he lived. He'd moved from Tambourine, Mount Tambourine, to a new location. And I had lost touch with him over the last 2 or 3 years since we'd seen them. And there I was, three. Now, that's not a higher power job. I don't know what is. He said, just come down. We're 3rd Street on the left. You know, number such and such. So I cannot deny that there is a higher power, because that's what saved me that day from possibly being committed. I had the vision there of me in a straitjacket and being carried away totally out of my mind, because my grandmother had actually been taken that way herself and had shock treatment way back, because she was married to a compulsive gambler who was brutal and sent her around the bend.
Helped to send her around the bend.
Because in those days, women stayed with their husbands, especially, you know, when there were children involved, you just didn't leave your husband. So whether that was a part of my higher power, my grandmother, because she'd gone to God by then, tapping me on the shoulder saying, get out, love. I didn't, and look what happened to me. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a bit of that, but it was beyond my understanding, and it seemed to be external to me. But it wasn't. It was within me. It was an amazing process that I talk about. I will talk about till the day I die, because I believe I've been blessed with the ability to do something in a situation mm-hmm. I believed I had nothing to offer, no mm-hmm. way of getting out of. Mm-hmm. But I was given a path of escape that day, and I'm so grateful. Mm-hmm.
And you talk, Brenda, about if anyone listening doubts that your life becomes unmanageable with this disease, I don't think they can after hearing that. And it's you talk about being worried that you're going to end up institutionalized in a psychiatric facility. But with that 1970s Stay Sharp kitchen mm-hmm. knife, it could have been prison. For me, as an adult, as a child of an alcoholic, I wasn't looking at knives. I was looking at pillows over the face. This is where it takes you. I'm sure the jails are full of people that have, women that have done that, and possibly men as well, that have just not been able to take it anymore.
Like so many community organisations, we need your continued financial support to keep 3CR on air and our community connected and strong.
Consider selecting Auto Renew for your subscription, so your subscription keeps rolling on every year.
We love the security of knowing we have your support into the future.
Head to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377 and remember to select recurring for your annual subscription.
And I don't believe in fighting today in any one front, but on all fronts. In fact, I'm a black nationalist freedom fighter.
This country is a nation of thieves.
Now, we're never going to get justice here in these filthy racist courts here.
Our people have been massacred, and we're not supposed to grieve for that. We've got to do something more drastic if we're serious about this.
Move over or we're going to move on over you.
Yellerman with Kieran Stewart-Asherton on 3CR. Dives deep into Indigenous resistance and global anti-colonial struggles. Featuring frontline activists, it confronts Australia's identity, challenges power structures, and fuels revolutionary discourse. Wednesdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you would like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform, or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. Absolutely hundreds of podcasts on that now. You can also contact us via phone or email. Today we're talking with Brenda about recovery from the effects of being close to someone with a problem of alcoholism through the 12 steps. And today Brenda is taking us through the 12 steps as she practiced them and as she understands them. So we're just going to jump. Obviously, practicing the 12 steps is a lifelong enterprise, but we're just going to jump straight on to step two, because I think Brenda's explained step one pretty well. She's also already touched on step two. So step two is, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I think Brenda's mm-hmm. already described that, but I'll read it anyway, what it says here, and you might add something to it, Brenda. Whether we live or have lived with the disease of alcoholism, the 12 steps offer hope. Step one gives us some detachment from the problem and some relief as a result of letting go of what we can't control. Step two begins to point the way to a higher level of serenity. For many of us, our past experience proved that on our own, we were unable to handle the effects that alcoholism had on our lives. In working step two, we learn to look beyond ourselves for answers. This step reminds us that we're not alone and that there is a power greater than ourselves to guide, direct, and restore us, regardless of what our interpretation of this power may be. And I think it's important to talk to the audience about that, regardless of what our interpretation of that power may be. Can you talk a little bit about that, Brenda?
Yeah, I look at steps one, two, and three as almost like in my first 5 years of Al-Anon that I had done those because I'd actually practiced them, put them into practice and had that result of escaping the marriage. But the interpretation of my higher power is, look, it is beyond my comprehension. I trusted it, I respected it, and I loved it. And they're all the things I'd lost for my husband, the trust, the love and respect. But that higher power, I just embraced it. And I was forced to look beyond myself for answers because I had no answers. So really, those first three steps, I came into Al-Anon that first meeting. From then on, I really went into step four very, very quickly. Got my sponsor was the best friend that brought me there. So we just went straight into the next steps. You know, steps four, five, and six, etc. And I needed to do that because I had parents, elderly parents, and I needed to make amends. So, but, I mean, I didn't just go into it in the first few weeks. I just stayed around those first three steps and just reinforced that is what happened. Because I was in shock that I had worked, I believe God had helped me to work this program when I didn't even know about it. How would that happen? So this is in us. This must be in us as a natural birthright.
Yes.
If we're born with this and somehow whether we're socialized out of it through the family disease of alcoholism or just the sick society perhaps that we might live in, I don't know. But I believe we are born with this and somewhere along the line. And what we have to do will restore us to sanity. Yeah, we've got to get it back. We were born with it. I was born sane. But in circumstances and alcoholism, and my parents were affected by the disease. My father's compulsive gambling. He was a compulsive gambler. And I didn't know till I was 21 years old that my mother had been rescuing him all her life because Dad had delicate mental health, let's put it that way. And we walked on eggshells. No drinking, teetotalers. But my mother also rescued her best friend, who was an alcoholic. We'd find Auntie Molly on the lounge every now and then because Mum had brought her home, gone down in the night. So I learned those rescuing behaviours from my darling Mum, who she didn't know any better. She just wanted to be the do-gooder, which I kind of became, but have learned since not to do that.
Wherever there's addicts, I think, you know, there's a whole bunch of rescuers. It's just the way of things. It's how it is. Yeah. I just love what you said there about it's our natural birthright. So just, you know, we can just completely forget about all the different ideas of God, that the stories that religions tell, and just go, we're talking about getting back to our natural birthright, and it's that idea of living free. I think we were born free. It's just starting to sound like a cliche, but we were born free and then life takes the freedom away.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, the circumstances under which we live, yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that? That step three to me is in some ways one of the wackiest, most radical ideas that you could think of, and that is that you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of whatever that God thing is. And I like at the beginning how you said it's something you didn't even know what to say when I said, what is it? Because you and so many people that have had spiritual experiences know that there's no real word for it.
Yeah.
So how on earth do you t- turn your will and your life over to that thing that you haven't even got words for?
I do it every day. I do it when I wake. I don't get out of bed till I've gone through my steps and the St. Francis prayer, which I love for humility, and the Serenity prayer. And I make that decision just in case I might have forgotten overnight. I don't ever want to forget that I have a higher power in my life. So I have to just remind myself because, you know, too often I think as a human being, as I am, fallible like everybody else, I can forget. That's why I keep coming back to meetings, just to keep reminding me. I mean, you know, I'll never be finished this program. There is no graduating from Al-Anon. I'm still on the journey. I will be. I'm nearly 80. I'm 80 next year. And I'm still on the journey. I'm still recovering. I will be till the day I turn my toes up. So making that decision is my insurance policy, and that I am in God's care. And when I go to bed of a night, before I go to sleep, never go to sleep without just handing over, checking in, that I'm having that conscious contact with my higher power morning, noon and night, every hour of the day. And sometimes during the day, if there's a crisis, and there hasn't been for a long, long time because I have this program, it's there if I need it, just to check in again. Oh, you are with me, aren't you, God? Yep. You know, it's just, it's like having a magic mentor in your life, someone there. And with that magic mentor comes the Al-Anon wisdom, because my higher power is so wrapped up in my Al-Anon program, I can't really separate them. It's all there. So when I'm calling on God for help, I'm calling on every bit of Al-Anon wisdom that I can conjure up in my head that I've learned or I've listened to, because most of my recovery has been through listening to other members that have gone before me. Even the newcomers offer me something always. You know, it's not just we that have been in it a long time, whether they've been in it 50 years or whether someone's been in it 5 minutes. I'm always learning something from every member. The simplest members of all often have the most impactful messages, you know? It's wonderful, yeah.
So would you say that it's perfectly fine to have all of that, you call all of that the higher power, you know, the magic mentor, I like that one, the magic mentor, the newcomers, the older members, fate, chance, all of that's all just part of it? Is that
we are so equal. This is a fellowship of equals. No one is more important than anybody else. Everyone has equal importance of what they say and an equal time to share in the meeting as well. So, yeah. And yeah. I call it God, higher power. That's great. To me, it's God. It's God. And it's interesting because most of my life up till I came to Al-Anon, I was 30 years old when I came in the program. When people would say to me, as they would, do you believe in God? I used to say, I believe in God. That's God with two O's, being good to yourself and being good to others. That was my cliche, whatever. That's how I feel about that. So it's easy for me to say God. Because So obviously I had some inkling of something there, but it took that monumental experience that happened on the last day of my marriage for me to actually really surrender and say, God, help me. I don't know what to do. Simple prayer.
Yeah. It's such a tricky word, isn't it? But, I mean, it is good to just reflect that it does happen to look like the word good, that some religions don't even use, there's some parts of Judaism, I think, they won't even write that word. You can't put it into words. And it's just something there, and it's so much part of our, even when we say it in a, you know, oh my God or God help me, or it's just part of the way our brains work, isn't it? To have that concept,
it is. And for me, it's genderless too. I mean, recite the steps with a him here and a he. That's fine because I mean, but it's genderless. He just covers she, whatever.
Yeah.
Multitude of things.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter. It just happens to be a pronoun or a specific to, you know, you've got to say something. God all the time, so it's got to be him or her sometimes. Yeah.
But, and it doesn't, but that's just the way it was in the past. Yeah. And it's just, it's a really, to me, a really, really dumb idea that that it would have a gender.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But it does feel like a very, it's a strength that does feel quite male, I guess, because of the power of it. That's only because I've been educated to believe that men are stronger than women. That's all.
Yeah. Even though women are stronger than men, Brenda. No, not just joking.
Now that's for another show.
It's another issue altogether. Al-Anon's got no opinion on outside issues. Which is another fantastic thing about Al-Anon, isn't it? Can you talk about that a little bit, how Al-Anon has got no opinion on anything at all that's got politically or socially or anything? Or, you know, can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'll just hark back to what I said about equality. It keeps us equal. We have the table card, no professions to be mentioned, we ask you to leave outside. We don't say don't. We just please leave outside your professions, your other 12-step programs, other literature, and your religion, because all those things put us into some sort of unequal level within the program. And I could be sitting next to a high court judge or a cleaner. It doesn't matter. I might be a professional, as I have been in my past life, but I might be a professional. It doesn't matter. I'm there because I have been affected by the disease of alcoholism, and whether I've got 3 degrees or, you know, bang a gavel at a court somewhere, or, as I say, clean toilets at the local caravan park, doesn't matter. I'm there because I have had, the daunting effects of alcoholism affect my life. And, so I love it. Keeps us equal.
Yeah. And I think it also, what it also does, Brenda, is it emphasises the differences between us. Like, you know, they're a high court judge, I'm a doctor, they're a cleaner. We don't want to do that. We want to turn up at a meeting and look for the similarities in us, in our humanity.
Not the differences. That's exactly right. And we say that to our newcomers. Look for the similarities, not the differences. And we also say sometimes, on occasions have said, and leave the alcoholic outside the door. We've all got one in life. That's why we're there. We've been affected by an alcoholic. So don't, sometimes newcomers can get a little bit, what's the word? Verbose about the alcoholic.
Well, they're having to get rid of the trauma somehow.
And we accept that, and we're very gentle with it. But if it keeps going on and on, we just say, look, you know, you're here for you. The alcoholic has AA. If they choose not to go, that's their business, their responsibility. You're here for you. You just focus on yourself. Keep focus on ourselves.
And of course, the rooms of the Al-Anon's full of people who are also alcoholics. So there's no we sound a little bit here how we're talking about these people drive us crazy, blah blah blah. But in fact, we understand that we're all the same. The alcoholic is just using alcohol for their pain. We use other things like fixing and managing and controlling alcoholics to take the mind off our pain. So we're all the same.
We ask anyone that's coming into our meeting for the first time to remain anonymous. Please do not disclose any aspect of your AA recovery. Focus on yourself. So we don't want to know if they're an alcoholic coming into our rooms. Someone declared themselves as one last night, and I thought, oh, gee. And we all just took a big and let it out, because this is someone that's been in the other program for many years but hasn't been in Al-Anon. So if it continues, we'll just perhaps just quietly say, look, you're here for yourself, whatever. But, because that makes us unequal again. Oh, there's an alcoholic in the room. Oh, we don't do that.
Not relevant.
It's not relevant. You're here for your recovery as someone who's been affected by someone else's alcoholism. You're not here for your own recovery. You've got AA to go to for that. So that's why we try and, look, it's not perfect, but we do the best we can to keep that equality. Yeah.
Thanks so much for that, Brenda. So this is the Living Free Show on 3CR. We're talking to Brenda, and we're making our way through the steps, and we've only got done step one, two, and three, and we're in the last part of the program. So, Brenda, step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, which seems a bit annoying to people when they come in the Al-Anon, like, what, I have to look at myself? But step four, it says here in this book, helps us to find the truth about ourselves. If we blame others for our own shortcomings, we continue to live as victims. But if we look at our own behavior, perceptions, and attitudes with genuine honesty, we realize that much of our misery is self-inflicted. Although step four fills many of us with fear, completing a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves empowers us to move forward in the recovery process. With guidance from a higher power, sponsorship, and loving support from other members of Al-Anon, we have the opportunity to live a full, rewarding life. Brenda, what's your take on step four?
This is where it got exciting for me. I became totally engrossed, infatuated, because my sponsor that brought me to the program, or my friend, I never called him a sponsor. She was just my trusted friend. It's only when I came back the second time to Al-Anon after a 10-year break that I realized that's what she was. We were just good friends that knew each other before the program. And so I embarked upon steps four, five, six, seven, eight, nine with this sponsor, with this beautiful friend who knew a lot about me. And it was just fantastic. She's much wiser than I was. She had been in Al-Anon longer than I had. And it was just fantastic to do. Didn't do it writing it down. We talked and talked and talked. We talked out our inventory, hers to me and mine to her. And I was able to admit those things. My greatest fault, defect of character was my inability to be honest with people. I was too scared to be honest with the alcoholic, too scared to be honest with my parents when I left home after I realised I'd been trying to interfere with their relationship and was none of my business. I was a fence sitter, too scared to tell my opinion or give my opinion, express it anyway, in case I might offend someone or they mightn't like me, all that stuff. And that carried into the marriage as well. And I just had to learn how to be honest. And this sponsor was just wonderful and listened to me. And I was able to make my list of people to make amends to. And also my defective character of wanting to rescue the world, you know, an alcoholic and anybody rescuing. Line up, I'll try and do it for you. And totally failed. But anyhow, the will was so strong for me to rescue. It was unbelievable. And so making that list of those persons I'd harmed, my parents, my children, I was able to do all this in that first 5 years. I'm so grateful because mum passed in 1991. I'd been in the program a year and I needed to make my amends to her, which was just amazing that I could do that. And then to my son, and when he passed in 1995, And thank God I had this program when that happened with both of them, because I would have gone insane. That loss to me was, he was just a beautiful soul at 23, died of cancer. And I just, that devastated me and his sisters. But I knew I had to be strong for them. And that's when the program came into me as well. Even though I wasn't going to meetings, this higher power, this God, never left me. In the time that I called out when I was 30, I know even the 13 years that I wasn't in Al-Anon after I left him, I know, after I left my husband, I know that there was something with me, because I would go to sleep at night and just say, please, God, let us wake up in the morning, because at that stage there was fear that my husband was going to come and harm me. So, you know, just never lost contact with it. So was able to make those amends. And it was only, it's a funny thing, it was only the second time round that I actually started to work really solidly on me. I'd made the amends to people, and it was the second time round for me, the 10-year break, when I realised that my disease of wanting to rescue my daughter, for instance, to change her, that was it, to change her. I wanted her to change. She was 35 years old, for heaven's sake. None of my business. Even though I was living under the same roof, none of my business. And that's where Al-Anon, that 10 years later, put me in my place, basically, and said, hey, mind your own business, and in a nice, gentle way, keep coming back to this group, and we'll sustain you throughout it, and we'll help you to get over your compulsion to want to fix, manage and control a 35-year-old who is as willful as you are, because you are her mother. Why shouldn't she inherit your strong will? And so, yeah, and so I was able to, and then all that happened. And then step 10 is just a matter of me continuing. That's why I do my prayers morning and night and check out through the day, just in a gentle way, to keep that conscious contact strong so that I have knowledge of my higher power, God's will for me, and can carry it out during the day. I had an incident this morning. Simple, the Al-Anon pause that we talk about, taking that break. This is beautiful. Driving my daughter to work because she's letting me have the car for the day, and she's just up the road, but I drove her to work, and she's in just recently in Al-Anon, and thank God she said she'd never go to Al-Anon 30 years ago, but here she is, and amazing. I love the program. I've never had anything to do with it. She just, I think we model the program to our relatives that aren't in it, and if they decide to take it on, that's up to them. But I can't make anybody come to Al-Anon, that's for sure. But anyway, we're up the road, and, oh, Mum, I've left my phone. This is a daughter that panics. Mum, I've left my phone home. I said, oh, okay. All right, what do you want me to do? Oh, I've got to open the shop. Take me to the shop. It's okay, because she opens the shop. She's a manager. Okay. So as you're coming around to the shop, I said, oh, here's my phone, love. Just ring. Ring and see if the phone is actually at home. So she rings the phone. It was just that Al-Anon pause that I'd taken, and her phone rang in her handbag. You see, things like that, whereas I would have normally just dropped her, rushed back home, searched a house where there was no phone, and there would have been a drama. This program stops me heading into any dramas because it gets me to stop, take a pause, that lovely Al-Anon pause. Okay. And that's a higher power coming in. Okay, that gentleness to be able to make a decision different to the one that I was going to make a few seconds before. It's an amazing program.
Because the obvious decision, isn't it, is just to go, oh, no, and go do a big U-ey straight back to the house. Yeah, yep. That's the normal, natural, obvious thing to do.
Yep.
But if you just stop and go, you know, be open to other possibilities.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a pause. It might be only a few seconds, but it's magic. That's the magic mentor coming in. You see, oh, we'll fix this. Lovely.
I've just got, because I got this book in front of me, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of my defects, so-called defects of character written down, or shortcomings, and they're procrastination, perfectionism, judgment, fear, worry, and tension. And it's so interesting how much tension is a problem. That tension, to me, sometimes tensing up, like panicking about the phone or whatever,
yeah,
it's almost like an alcoholic taking the first drink, because once I let myself get tensed up like that, the openness to other possibilities is gone, and I've gone into control freak mode very quickly. So, so that's it's interesting working with these. I've got all my shortcomings written down, and I can easily now go, oh, it's that thing that's causing you the problem now.
Yes, I've absolutely. My top of my list is people pleasing, doing what others wanted. The do-gooding, fear, one of my defects of character, overgiving, overdoing, overachieving, all those things. Even when I went back to late mature age study, you know, I had to be top of the class. Oh, worked my butt off. Others weren't putting that pressure on themselves. That perfectionism, doing your best, and not being satisfied even when you're doing your best. I can do that. I can actually. I'm in a writing group. I have been for some years. Through COVID, it's a U3A group, and it's just fantastic because my writing, it's just pouring out of me. I've got so many family memoirs and experiences that I'm putting down on paper before dementia strikes you. So you've got to get and you know, and I find I'm not trying to achieve like I did when I did the mature age study and the tertiary study. I'm just allowing it to flow, etc. And it's a lot, and there's a lot of Al-Anon in what I write, etc. And what I'm finding, it's incredible, Anne, because other people are beginning to open up with their writing, because I've opened up, because I just put it down as it is. I don't doctor it. This is how it was, and use my command of the English language to try and express it as well as I can. And that's actually, I'm noticing people are opening up and becoming more freer with their writing. And I think it's because this is a program. This is a program working, you know, through those that carry it. Can't help it.
And I think that's one of the great things about the modern world. Like back in the day, like you're talking 1970s, where, you know, there's all that stigma attached to having an alcoholic or an addict in the family, and all the secrets and stuff. And I must say, the younger generations now are much more able just to say, you know, I'm in therapy, I'm traumatized, I'm whatever, you know. So it's a good thing. And that's a force for change.
Yes.
You opening up there is, that's what allows other people to open up, as you say.
I think it's like the program suggests that we don't try and change anybody else. Don't try and just let people see you in action in the world and take what they like and leave the rest, basically. And if they see something about you that may be, and through the grace of Al-Anon, that they feel that they might try on as a behaviour or as a way of being, you know, they're free to, but there's no one sort of beating them over the head. That was another defective character. I used to beat up on myself. Oh, I hear a lot of that in Al-Anon, beating up on ourselves, self-flagellation, just bang, bang, get the whip out, and goodness. And I'm not perfect at that, because I just dropped something on the floor prior to the program and I heard myself abusing myself. See, it happened. It's habit. I'll stop it. I just tell myself to stop it. Stop it. Because, you see, I'm still a student of this program. I'm still learning.
Yeah. And I think the reason, a lot of people say, why do you still go to that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you don't need to, you know, you must get it now. The point is that the habits that are ingrained in you, I think, will probably stay ingrained in you. So the whole practice of it, as with all spiritual practices, is to overcome natural tendencies, which are always going to be there.
Absolutely. And the practice is doing something repeatedly over and over and over. So the more meetings, I mean, you know, one meeting, I know one meeting a week is not enough for me. I probably do five meetings, maybe six sometimes three or four. One of them is face-to-face and the others are on Zoom. But I don't care how I get this meeting. I'll get it any way I can. It's my sustenance, you know. And so that practice, doing it repeatedly, is how the program becomes ingrained in us and gets into our DNA. This program's in my DNA. I can't deny it. It's not going to completely take it over. But there's a lot in there. I don't know what percent. It doesn't matter. But it's in there. And I just have to pause to feel the effects of what is in there. So when I don't pause, the old behaviours will come in. Bang.
Yeah.
Because they are skin deep. As someone says that, I mean, it's just skin deep. Scratch the surface. Is the disease.
Mm-hmm. There it is.
Yep.
Those step six and seven are kind of all about knowing that you've got these tendencies, you know, to fear or worry or procrastination or fixing, managing, controlling, whatever. Yeah. And it's being kind of open to having them removed, but you can't force them out as well, because if you're watching someone and you're thinking, God, can you stop letting your washing pile, like whatever your thing is, or get your feet off the chair or whatever you're tempted to jump in and tell someone how to behave about. Just to take the precise example of your daughter living with you and you wanting to control her, how did you manage to overcome that desire to fix, manage and control that other person?
Well, getting back to my meetings, was, and just to admit that I was trying to control her. That's the big thing, admitting I am trying to do this. There was no denial. I knew what I was doing. I'm trying to change this young woman. I just had to basically take the pause when I would come through the laundry and the washing was piled up, let it pile up. Now, I might bring it in off the line. If it was a wet day and I could see the rain was coming, but I wanted to leave my daughter's responsibilities to her. I would clean my part of the house, and I also had they cooked meals while I used to keep the kitchen clean, so I could leave the kitchen spotless when I went to bed. My own section would be lovely and clean. Whatever was happening down there was none of my business. I just had to use live and let live, like it was going out of style. Mind your own business. So I was able to learn very quickly because I needed to. I was ready to sell the house. We'd only been in it 18 months. My God, it would have been a hell of a financial disaster. That daughter and I have the most amazing relationship today. I have one with each of my daughters, one in Paris and one here. And it's because I bought another house. I sold that one and went and lived by myself. I moved to my own residence. They went back into the rental market. And a few years later, I bought this property where I have my own separate unit, separate entrance. I can come in, whatever. And my daughter has the house with the two girls who've left home now, but she and her husband. And it's because of Al-Anon I have those amazing relationships with my children. Oh, it's great. Very liberating to mind your own business.
Yeah. Yeah. And have some business to mind, is the other
Absolutely.
One. Yeah. You can't just say, don't look at that. Don't look at that that's going over there. You've got to actually begin, go over and do something else for yourself. Yeah.
And I've got plenty to focus on in my own place. As I say to many meetings, I am a full-time job. Looking after me, and as I'm getting older, it's becoming even more of a full-time job because I'm a bit slower. I'm there if people need me for emergencies or whatever. I'm always there. It doesn't happen very often. Like except with this morning with a phone, that's okay. But you know, I just need to focus on me, and that's what the program is about: focusing on ourselves, taking our eyes off the sick alcoholic or, people we're trying to change.
Now, Brenda, as we're at the end of the interview, and I'm conscious that we've got onto, it's a conversation between two people that have been doing this for a long time and are not living with active alcoholism. Now, we know that things are much more difficult. It's harder. You can't take your eye off someone who's hurting your kids or who's keeping everyone up all night or who's in a car accident or whatever. What do you say to someone who's in the grip of the active situation?
Well, I get a lot of calls. I do helpline roster a lot, and I did a lot over COVID, and I used to get a lot of calls over COVID. It was a very difficult time for people. Well, one of my first questions, if I can hear from what they're sharing with me that there is a danger, or I'll say to them, are you in danger? Are you and your children in danger? If you are, you need to, and I would have numbers to refer them to or, whatever. Mostly people just want information on where they can go for help because they go to their psychiatrists, psychologists and their counsellors and whatever, and they're not getting, in many cases, what they need, and they need to be with people that are going through or have gone through what they are going through. Counsellors can give them great advice, and I'm sure that they have their place in the scheme of this disease called alcoholism. But Al-Anon just has another dimension to it as far as helping people to recover from the disease because you're with people that are, at the coalface, basically. The counsellors, unless they're actually coming to Al-Anon themselves, have that distinct problem, they're distant from the coalface. They can only take people a certain way. But you come into Al-Anon, and if you can get past the word God, that can be an obstacle. There's just so much wisdom there for people to use from day one.
And it's important to point out, isn't it, Brenda, that Al-Anon is a huge part of the solution, but there's other things you might have to do in order to deal with the problem with, looking after your kids or housing, all that stuff, and we're not there to fix any of those things.
Yeah, that's exactly right, And sorry,
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, I've just wrote a little bit, and the service part of Al-Anon, and I believe service is the program's lubricant. That's what keeps it. And I've compared it to, I have osteoarthritis, and I've compared it to osteoarthritis where I can take tablets, take injections, I can eat ginger, or yummy, turmeric, avoid certain foods, eat certain foods, but exercise is my body's lubricant. Without exercise, and that's to me what service is. That keeps the loop, you know, keeps the wheels turning and keeps it all active.
Just explain what you mean by service in Al-Anon.
Well, we say giving back to Al-Anon what it is given to us by carrying the message of Al-Anon, not jumping on a soapbox, just getting out there, delivering pamphlets, taking pamphlets to your local doctor, local library, community centres, being a guest speaker on 3CR, a guest speaker at anniversaries and those sorts of things, just basically helping to set the room up for a meeting, you know, to set the room down for a meeting. Everyone's in on this because people will tell you, I don't know what I'd do. I would have gone mad without this program. Oh, I'm so grateful for it. Well, if we're that grateful, let's keep the program, you know, in the consciousness of the rest of society, because a lot of them don't know about it, Anne.
People know about AA, but they don't seem to know about Al-Anon so much.
Not a secret society. We are anonymous, but we're not a secret society. We need to let people know we exist.
That's all we've got time for, Brenda. It's been absolutely fabulous talking to you, and thank you for your wisdom.
And I've loved speaking with you, and thank you for doing this. This is wonderful service you're doing. Thank you so much.
If you're concerned about drinking in a relative or friend and would like to find out more about Al-Anon family groups, then you can phone them on 1300 252 666 or go online at alanon.org.au. If the content in the segment you just listened to has raised questions or caused distress to you, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au. Coming up next, we have Balam Wah, The Spirit of Wah, hosted by Uncle Tal Jim Choco Edwards. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now for more Radical Radio on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.